Hello, and welcome to a convention spotlight episode on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo. In this episode, I will be talking about a convention I recently attended.
The hotel after having been to Comic-Con on Saturday. This is always for me a bit of an overwhelming day because the crowds are the worst or the most packed or whatever, and it makes for a long day. I'm not crazy about the crowds.
Several people I was talking to today, when I asked them, do you feel like this is a bit of a sleep deprivation con, they just started nodding their heads. Yes.
Yeah, we got up and out to breakfast reasonably fast this morning, which is good because it allows us to get a little bit more sleep. And one of the things I thought was kind of interesting is we're over in Liberty Station, away from the thick of Comic-Con, but not like totally isolated. And in past years, even one of the previous days, it's like, oh, I recognize that's part of the Sci-Fi Street team or some of the people that are working the booths or, mm-hmm. or whatever. Today, we actually noticed one of the celebrities. And again, that term in the Comic-Con context can mean so many different things.
Yeah.
Because we've actually had some times where we've seen big name stars of popular TV shows and stuff or movies, whatever. Others, it's like you recognize them if you know who they are.
Yes.
This was probably more in that category. It was Austin St. John, the original Mighty Morphin Red Power Ranger. So he was there at breakfast just, you know, being a regular guy, having breakfast and stuff before heading over to the convention. So that was kind of funny. I find watching people like that that have had, at one point, mega celebrity stuff, but that was, again, a while ago. Some people, it really, man, it changes them. Others, it's, yeah, it happened. It wasn't a big deal. Mm-hmm. He was in that category.
Yeah.
The drive over, not too bad. Getting into the parking garage actually, I think, went faster than either of us had anticipated.
Yeah.
There was two 10 a.m. panels I was interested in. I originally planned to go to the XKCD panel. Mm-hmm. The guy who does that webcomic strip has a book, you know, how to handle things by making them way more scientifically complex than you would have ever need to. One of the examples being, you know, how to cross a river by boiling it away. But I got up there. And I noticed that the Hall 5A line wrapped down that aisle or that hallway across the hallway seemed to be going back up the next hallway.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I'm curious, but I'm not that curious. Mm-hmm. So I just walked right into Hall 2 and caught another one of Maxwell Alexander Drake's classes or whatever, this time on Point of View.
Nice.
It was good. He had a lot of good things to say. It was pretty clear he thought he had a newer version of his slide deck than what he was using, because at one point it's like, hey, let me go check, and pointed out, yep, I corrected these. Honest, I did.
That can be so frustrating.
Yeah.
I've actually had a few author emails that have come out with just hilarious messages about, honest, I was sure the final proofread perfect version went to Amazon for the Kindle version. And one author, bless her heart, she said, you know, talk about just being beside yourself with panic. One of my author friends picked up my book as soon as it hit Kindle in support, went through it, and sent me an email saying, honey, did you mean to include your grocery list at the end?
Oh, that's funny. I don't know how that particular problem can happen, but I mean, all sorts of things happen.
A copy and paste error at the very end when you're
yeah.
doing one of the final edits. And she said it was just one revision back. And she said, I had caught that copy and paste error. I had fixed it.
You check, you double check, you still miss stuff. On the podcast, I've had episodes I've forgotten to attach the audio, or I attached the previous month's audio, or, you know, it doesn't happen often. But for me, out of, you know, 1,600 plus episodes, it has happened.
Yeah.
So that, yeah. You need not just an attention to detail, but a hyperactive one at times. So the fact he had a different slide deck, it was an older version, but still was able to get through it all. Actually, he barely got through it all because he's, you know, running a little late, you know. And he's, it's not that he started late. He started right on time and actually had been taking questions for the 5, 10, 15 minutes prior to that because he was first panel of the day. And gave people some really good answers and stuff like that. It was a good panel. His stuff's always enjoyable. Again, he's got two books on writing, dynamic storytelling, and point of view on available on Amazon. Definitely worth checking out. After that, in that same room, was another one of Brian Haberlin's panels. This was comics from start to finish, where he was going to take a comic from start to finish. And he used Sonata as the example, which was cool. His current work. And he showed, apparently, waitingfortrade.com is a blog his co-writer for that book, David Hine, does that has, you know, some behind-the-scenes stuff that I need to check out. But he started from, here's the pitch document, here's some promo art where he was just trying to get a feel for what the world was going to look like, you know, how did they pick the logo or the title to get to the logo, those kinds of things, you know, what's your marketing plan. And it was more, how do you get a comic from concept towards getting it going? Mm-hmm. It was not literally, here's a comic from start to finish.
Yeah.
Because he never really got past that kind of that marketing plan. How do you hype it? It used to be back when he started, you put it out there, it'll do fine. Mm. We are not in that market.
No.
He did show a couple of tools. Comic Life 3 that made lettering look just like a breeze.
Nice.
He basically only showed, okay, here's a word balloon, another word balloon, you can easily attach them, move the linkage up, down, left, mm-hmm. right, change the fonts, do some fancy lettering. I would have appreciated if he tossed some art behind it. Mm. This is how you move it around sort of video. But it's like a $25 piece of software. Odds are I'll pick it up just to play with it. So it was a good panel, better than what he'd done for the other ones, but still, if you were hoping to get a comic from start to finish, first off, our panel, not going to happen.
Yeah.
He could have blasted through a lot more stuff and done some high level, you know, here's the steps of the process, but not enough for you to actually feel, oh, I could do that. So it would have been nice if he'd gotten further. I'd love for him to do like an all-day seminar or some such, like before con, after con, something like that. I know he teaches. I just don't know what format some of that takes. I know he's got digital art tutorials. He did give out a $40 voucher for one of those. So again, I've just got to see, you know, what's up there and how much of what he does with the 3D art through the whole process. He's got some tutorials on. Last I looked, it was more on inking and coloring than the 3D side of it, which is what I'm most interested in. But good-sized crowd. People seemed to really enjoy it. It was a good panel.
Nice.
In some past years, I do think he's given a little bit more hands-on, actionable stuff. Mm-hmm. But it was good. He's definitely worth listening to. And he had not only a lot of his books and stuff to show. He had a 3D print from Sonata. It's like, well, you got the 3D assets. You can print the thing. This took 3 days to print, but I could do it. You know, some stuff like that. After that was when we met up to do the Star Trek Discovery signing. That was fun. It is always interesting to me when they've kind of got to make a hole in the crowd to get the talent from, you know, the loading dock area, essentially, into the hall. Yeah.
They did well.
They did. I was surprised when they, because this was in that booth where they've got the transporter pad. And I'd have to go look at the map to find out if it's a double wide, how big that booth is.
Oh, 2x2?
Hang on. I am looking now. And yeah, it's 2x2. So 20 foot by 20 foot, some of which was taken up, of course, by the transporter room. We talked about how when we'd gone through and did the transporter room, they had a couple of, you know, display things out. So they were, you know, basically taking podiums and all for the displaced things out, mm-hmm. putting in some tables, putting director chairs behind it. Bit of a tight squeeze.
Yeah.
But they made it work. They had Rebecca Romijn there, who played number one for Enterprise on Discovery. Let me phrase it that way. They had David
Ajala, maybe?
Ajala? I'm probably mispronouncing his name. I apologize. At first, I was like, what's he doing here? Apparently, they'd announced he's going to have a role in next season.
And that was our best guess, because we were sitting there racking our brains going, this isn't what we recognize him from.
He was Manchester Black on Supergirl.
Yeah. And, you know, the moment he walked out, we're like, we know him, not from here, but we know him and we like his work.
Yeah, I'm glad to see him getting on track.
Yeah.
And it was funny because Rebecca Romijn, I think we know more from Librarians and other works. She did a PI series.
Yeah, and you were asking.
Maxwell and King.
That's it. Yeah.
And also did Eastwick, I think was the.
Yes.
She's done a few other things and was Mystique in some of the early X-Men films. But then they had, I forget her name, the one who plays Max, that plays
Burnham.
Michael Burnham. She was really nice.
Yeah, Sonia, I want to say is her first name. She was very nice. All of them were very kind to every person who came through the line. When they would realize they were just signing the poster and it hadn't been personalized, they could ask, can we please personalize this to you? Can we make this special?
They didn't seem to be there out of obligation, but out of actually wanting to interact with the fans.
Yeah. Yeah. And well, David, who we know from Supergirl, when we were telling him, you know, we've enjoyed your work as Manchester Black. We can't wait to see you in this. And I told him, I said, you know, I really hope the mass of humanity that is Comic-Con didn't overwhelm you. And he said, I can see where it has the potential. But I'm here for this one-on-one. I'm loving the fan interaction, the feedback. It's so gratifying to have someone actually say, I saw the work. I enjoyed the work. And when you think about when they're filming it, they've got 75 crew members. But they're being told, oh, trust us. Hundreds of thousands of people will see this.
Well, it's funny because we've been on a couple of sets while they're shooting. And they're playing for an audience that's not there. Sure, you've got all the cast and the crew, but they're basically, hey, is you know, the camera going? Is this going? And I don't say that they're ignoring the actors.
No, but they're contributing to the final product, and they're very busy doing that.
They're working, and they're not reacting to the performance in many cases because they can't audibly do it or visibly because you need the sound, you need the image.
Well, and even afterwards, when the actors come to somebody and say, how was that? There are people who have to say, don't have a clue. My back had to be towards you to make sure nobody accidentally walked into your shot. Things like that. So, yeah, there's that massive delay before they get actual tangible feedback.
Well, and even if the people on set, oh, yeah, you were great, kind of doesn't matter until, again, the audience really can weigh in. So when you've got people willing to stand in line in a crowded place when there's literally thousands of other things vying for their attention right then and there, I can definitely see where it's both an ego boost and gratifying to the talent.
It's an affirmation.
Yes.
That their work was the high quality they hoped it was, that it was as well received as they were told it was.
Well, and particularly for David, who's not yet on the show, for us to say, we have seen you elsewhere. We're excited for you to be on this show.
Yeah.
You know, we know you will do well, you know, is, I think, a good thing for them to hear. And then the fourth person was Ethan Peck, who played Spock.
Yeah.
And clean shaven, hair was a little different, no pointy ears. Actually looked surprisingly different.
Yes.
You know, I think he could actually walk the hall without getting recognized.
I think you're right. Yeah.
But he did a great job. Again, all of them were really nice, seemed like good people. It seemed like a fun set that it would have been to be on.
Yeah.
Very friendly and stuff like that. So that was fun. Again, I was surprised how quickly they had kind of retooled the booth subtly. Even when they were coming out with the director chairs, at one point I noticed they're like, have a power screwdriver, go screw in the footrest and stuff like that, just to make sure things are solid and whatnot. It was a tight squeeze, and I'm wondering if there was a slightly different way they could have designed the booth to make it work a little better. And I don't know. Having walked the whole floor since we did the transporter room thing, well, I think they could have done a little bit better on execution, although, again, time constraints, space constraints, and throughput constraints, I don't know how much better they could have done. I thought it was fun. I would say it was one of the better design booths and experiences on the floor.
Yeah.
It was fun. It was clearly Trek. It wasn't an overblown, oh my God. Because we've been, like when they did the White House for Designated Survivor, maybe?
Yes.
Huge booth. And it, you go inside, you stand, you watch a video, you're done.
You get to be in the Oval Office. So people mill around taking pictures of the fake Oval Office, which slows down the line and it's kind of carpet and a desk.
Mm-hmm.
So it feels kind of anticlimactic.
Yeah. Here, at least, they tried to do a very immersive thing on the transporter room.
Mm-hmm.
And again, the outside was themed very Trekkish. And I'm sure made for a good backdrop for them as they were doing the signing. Because they had cameras all around and such. So we did that. We were still kind of in the area when they brought Patrick Stewart out for a later signing. And that's, again, another one, make way kind of thing.
Yeah.
And it was funny because I was standing kind of between some people in the booth. And people behind me, what's going on? What's going on? Oh, they're bringing out Patrick Stewart. Who? He played Captain Picard. Who? Now, granted, they were young.
Yes.
People or whatever. Definitely not old enough to have been around during Next Generation or any of the Next Generation movies. Probably not old enough to have been watching or understanding, say, Enterprise even. So I get the confusion. It's just not raised right.
There are some classics. There are some shows that you just feel the need to go back and rewatch.
Yeah, but it's also a sign of how we're getting older, because that was coming out when I started college is when it started airing.
I had a conversation with someone at a booth a day or two ago. I want to say Hasbro has Cookie Monster for sale because it's the 50th anniversary of Sesame Street. And I was telling them I think it's great that Sesame Street's 50th anniversary is not only being celebrated with panels, but licensed toys, and people are appreciating. PBS was there. Sesame Street hit the cultural relevance of it.
Yeah.
Yes. And they looked at me and said, if it hadn't aired on PBS, it would have aired somewhere. It's not like it wouldn't have happened.
It would not have happened.
And I thought,
and if it did, it certainly wouldn't have happened the way it did.
Well, but this was spoken by someone who I can't help but wonder, do you realize there were only 3 channels and PBS? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
So many people take for granted the 100+ channels we flip through on a daily basis that they forget.
Well, go back to the Hugh Jackman concert when he was trying to explain for the younger people in the audience. When he grew up, there were only 3 channels. Now, this is over in Australia, and people are like, yeah, here too. He's like, really?
Yeah.
You know?
Well, and I loved when he said I would get home, I'd flop down on the couch, I'd watch TV. Oh, wait, let me fix that. I would turn on the TV, then I could flop down on the couch.
Had to do it by hand, no such thing as a remote.
Yeah.
Well, it reminds me of one of the earlier guest appearances I did in somebody else's podcast, and this would have been 2007-ish, give or take a year. On genre television. And the host, Ian, asked, so what network did you first encounter, you know, sci-fi programming on? And I'm like, well, I guess I'm a little bit older than you are because, you know, he was like Sci-Fi Channel or this or that. And I'm like, none of that was around when I first hit some of this stuff.
Yeah.
You know, it was ABC, NBC, CBS, and PBS kind of things. So it's stuff that we kind of take for granted, younger members of the mass audience are just blissfully unaware of.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there are certain things from our childhood and youth that are, I would say, not just cult classics, but legitimately iconic parts of American history.
Yeah.
And certainly Star Trek is one of them and predates our childhood.
Yes.
Certainly yours and definitely mine too, because I think it was off the air before I was born by a couple of months.
Yeah.
But seeing Patrick Stewart on the hall floor and the crowd again kind of going nuts was cool, was good. I do think having that level of celebrity in a booth on the floor has logistical challenges.
I was going to say, it's hard.
they handled it great.
Yeah.
I think CBS All Access did a terrific job. I think con security and everything else ran smoothly. But we did hit a few times on the floor where it's either stop so we can clear a hole and get somebody through, or there. Well, later we were.
We stumbled by the signing for the Orville.
Yeah.
Which, okay, now that they've made an announcement for the Orville, I suddenly understand the booth. And I say that because frequently I would look up and I would see a booth that said Hulu. Mm-hmm. And I would think, wait, that's where I thought the Fox booth was. Then later I'd see the Fox booth and I'd say, wait, that's where I thought the Hulu booth was. I'm so confused.
But apparently Orville and I guess some other shows are shifting from Fox to Hulu.
Yeah.
So kudos to them for having that kind of a transition booth.
Yeah, well, and I mean, I know that several of the shows I watch on Fox have for a while been telling me, you know, stream on Fox Online or Hulu, and have been doing a big Hulu push.
Now that makes sense.
Yeah.
Well, the big push I noticed at that point was everyone keep moving, take your photo and move on kind of a deal. Because mm-hmm. even when you've got maybe a 20-foot aisle, which I don't, they may have had that. Let me double check the map.
I think it was a pretty wide aisle, but they had the people right up against the booth getting the signatures. They had the Disneyland line feeding into that.
Yeah.
Then they had a layer of people wanting photos. Then they had a layer of security saying, keep moving. And that's where we were walking was next to security.
It was a 20-foot aisle between Hulu and AAA Anime Distribution or something. It did not feel like 20 feet. It was packed. And they're just pushing people along of keep moving. We got to get people through here.
Yeah.
And they have to. I get it. But there comes a point where I can't move when there's like a wall of security guys in front of me, you know, theoretically directing traffic, but also taking up space. And of course, all the other con goers that are sitting there with the cameras up trying to get the footage or what.
Yeah.
So I think it's cool that they do these kinds of signings and stuff, but I prefer it at smaller conventions where you can actually get up near the people.
Mm-hmm.
And we've had a couple of times, we've had some good discussions with celebrities, former celebrities and stuff that you couldn't even dream of having.
Yeah.
San Diego. Flip side, you're not going to have that many of them in one place like you do here and now.
Very true.
So that was fun. I think after that, we dropped some of your heavy books back at the car, grabbed a soda.
Okay, just once, I want you to refer to my lightweight books.
You start getting lightweight books and I'll do that.
Okay, because you mentioned my books, I'm going to go ahead and shove at you one of the books. I got it at, I still call the booth Del Rey, but of course it's the whole umbrella of imprints and publishers. And they have the wizard and you go through the tablet and pick the options I told you about last night. And this time, and you're, ironically, you're on what I would call the back cover, I think, but it is the front cover.
It is the back cover. It's a hardcover manga. One, I didn't know they did hardcover manga. It's by Kodansha, and it is
Vinland Saga.
Vinland Saga.
I gotta say,
it's funny because I think it was Brian Haberlin who, in his panel this morning, was talking about having an easy-to-read logo. And how some of these are not, I would have not necessarily gotten that on the first pass. The V and the D.
Yeah, I can see that. I read it on the tablet and remembered it from.
Yeah.
I liked the title when it came up. And then when I flipped through it, when they handed it to me, I'm like, this is pretty cool.
This is a 465-page manga. And it's funny, it's got some of the, like, the copyright page at what would be the front of one of our books, but the back of that kind of a book. And it's numbered such that if you've got the spine on the left and open the book, you're at the back, hence this being the back cover. But that's pretty hefty volume.
Yeah. That was one of the ones that needed to go to the car, because I'm like, we can either walk to the far end, where a friend has said we can leave things at his table, or walk the same distance to the car and not have to carry it again.
And this has a cover price of $20 for 460 plus pages of content. That's not a bad deal.
I was going to say that goes back to a conversation in a panel we were at later, because there are, well, and it is hardback, but there are a lot of people who are going to say for a 400-page novel, I don't want to pay that kind of money. And at your comic sales panel, they were talking about the fact that they have to remind book publishers that pages of art are different than pages of prose.
Just to clarify, when you say my comic sales panel, I was not on the panel. No, we just went.
You were not, but you convinced me to go with you. It was a panel you selected, yes, and you persuaded me to walk into the room.
It was the Sales for Comics Publishers panel that had a couple of different people from different publishers. Bob Wayne, formerly of DC, somebody from Oni, somebody from Dark Horse, somebody from Boom, somebody that was an independent sales consultant or whatever. Yeah, and they're just talking about, from their perspective, how the stuff works.
Well, and the independent consultant used to work at Penguin Random House.
Yeah.
So that was some interesting stuff.
It was interesting. I was hoping for something that might give me a little more food for thought or whatever for the number crunching. And it wasn't that kind of panel.
It wasn't what I expected, but it was interesting for the process junkies,
yeah,
on how your material gets sold. And it seemed to mostly be about the trades, the things that go to bookstores.
It was mainly about that because that's what most of them had dealt with. And it was also how to sell to the bookstores, not how the books sell at the bookstores. And they, yes, clarified, we're doing sell in, not sell through. But also how, for a comic property, there's kind of those four sales windows. There's the pre-order phase for the comic, the in-the-store phase for the comic, the pre-order phase for the trade or hardcover, and the, mm-hmm, the in-the-store phase. And trying to get kind of four swings at bat for the same property.
Yeah.
And I forget if it was Bob Wayne or who said that basically, well, if they're interested, it's not hard. But if they're not, in other words, there's some stuff that sells itself, you know, mm-hmm, it's not hard to generate interest. You just say it's coming out.
Yeah.
But there's other stuff of, okay, this is the collection of just another story for just another character at just another publisher.
Well, and one of the people was talking about, and I believe it was a comic book, but he was saying it was kind of a very specialized niche interest thing.
It was how to make the perfect cup of coffee or something like that.
Yes.
And he's like, I'm going to offer it to the direct market, but I don't think that it's going to do gangbusters, mm-hmm, but kind of a why not? But man, if I can get this into certain venues, certainly it's going to do well at bookstores at certain times of year. If I can get it into like a cooking store or whatever. There are a few places where it's so niche, but man, if you nail that and get the right thing at the right place at the right time, you do beautifully.
Yeah.
But that, for some stuff, the direct market is not the target market. Mm-hmm. And I think at some point somebody also mentioned Scholastic.
Yes.
Being a really big player in the game, not again in the direct market.
Yeah.
But again, that's not the only place you're selling to. And it always amuses / frustrates me when people push back on my numbers and my analysis. Oh, well, that's not the full picture. It's like, I never say it is.
Yeah.
Matter of fact, I'm very clear saying what it is I am talking about and how there is this bigger picture. Because all the sales that are happening this week at the convention, virtually zero of those are going through the Diamond's direct market system.
Very true.
You know, some are direct from the creators, direct from the publishers, or, you know, what have you. And certainly I think they matter, but not in that driving force of the industry kind of a way.
Well, and one of the questions that came out, and I think it was from the person moderating, was, do you think we should basically do away with the weekly floppy comic books? Because you're all talking about trades.
And Bob Wayne had a really good answer of, essentially, if you do, you'll destroy the current market in its current shape. It just couldn't handle that flip.
Yeah.
Because bookstores are hoping to get you in there maybe once a month.
Yeah.
But comic stores, you're there 25 times a year at least. And we need that influx. You're there, you're going to buy something, and the habitual pattern. Mm-hmm. And trying to somehow magically shift that away to a somehow yet still stable version that's based on trades coming out like at best every 3 months or every 6 or every 12. It's a fundamentally different market.
Well, and the weekly, the monthly, the comic books are habit forming, for lack of a better expression.
And low cost entry.
Yes.
I will try something at a $299, $399 price point that I'm not going to go drop $20 or $30 on hoping it's good. It's much less intimidating for me to say I'll read 20 pages of something for $3-4 versus that hardcover of 460 some odd pages.
Yeah.
That's I got to allocate part of a weekend for that.
Yeah.
You know, depending how fast you read and how well paced the manga is. It's not a do it in one sitting kind of a thing. And again, nothing wrong with that. There's good value for that. But
yeah,
it's a different model. So I thought that panel was good. That was middle of the afternoon kind of a thing. I was surprised how full the room was, particularly there at the end.
That was funny.
Because we'd come in at the tail end of the previous panel just to get a seat and such.
And then the room kind of emptied and we could move to a better seat and all
when
was good.
When the panel started, the majority of, I'm going to say, the next dozen rows in front of us on our side were empty.
Yeah, because we were in the back row and we were happy. We were comfortable.
The previous panel was Nerdist Subverting the Superhero's Journey, then was Sales for Comics Publisher. And I'm pleased this one was packed because they had a long line. It's like, hey, if you're not staying, get out and make room. They came for the moon, 50 years of Apollo 11.
Ah, nice. That explains why they said it was a popular panel.
Yeah. I'm glad that was what they would consider a popular panel, because some years wouldn't have been. Wouldn't have been 50 years either. Anyways, it was a fun panel. That was good. After that, we basically just kind of walked the floor for a while.
Yeah. I did a lot of floor walking today. I got you the Think Geek price list. This year, I didn't see anything that really jumped out at me.
The one that was a little interesting was the Spock action figure.
With the uniforms?
Which had the different uniforms he did. It also had the Mirror Universe uniform and head. For $40 for a Mego 8-inch action figure with multiple outfits, two heads, I'd consider it. But I haven't been getting Mego 8-inch figures for 30, 40 years. They're making them again, so that helps.
Yeah.
And I've certainly considered some other 8-inch action figures, because I think there's a line that's doing essentially like almost every character from the old Super Friends cartoon and such. Mm. If I had a good place to display them and could get a good kind of poster of the classic cartoon Hall of Justice, I could see building up the roster.
And then the cards where I keep getting Captain America, it turns out they have two booths. They're wise enough to print a map to give you directions between the two booths.
I knew they had the Kotobukiya booth over in Hall C, not far from Diamond. I'm not sure I totally realized they had the other one in Hall D, kind of down past Hasbro Pulse.
It's a very small one.
I'm sure I've seen it. I just may not have recognized the two. Interesting, they've got them so far apart.
Yeah. Well, when I told them that I really want someone other than Captain America, because I'm up to three of them, they gave me multiple attempts for tonight.
So far, we've each opened, I think, three packs.
Mm-hmm.
Out of them, we've gotten three Captain Americas, two Hulks, and a Thor?
Yes.
I'm thinking to round out the original Avengers, we need Ant-Man, Wasp, and Iron Man.
Okay, I'm thinking your only hope is Iron Man, because they gave me a flyer showing which statues they had for sale at one of their two booths.
I figured they were based on the statue, particularly based on the Hulk one.
Now, it does say that there are five types, so I wonder what the fifth one is.
I don't know. Okay, out of the, how many do we have? Four each?
Four per person, because I kind of bemoaned to the poor people at the booth that three Captain Americas.
Out of these eight, how many do you think will be Captain America? You think four?
Because four are in front of me, and I've only opened Captain America so far.
I thought I'd gotten one of the caps and you'd gotten...
No, you got two Hulks, I got two caps, and then finally you opened a Thor, and I still had Cap.
Okay. I'm going to say five of these are Cap. We'll see who's right. Shall we?
Yes.
Start with just doing one of them.
I got nobody.
Yeah, I was going to say, I wasn't sure how to count this either. Because I got one that's basically Thor, Cap, Iron Man, and Hulk, all of them.
I got the Avengers.
Yeah, I think you need to show it back. Even this time I got Cap without getting just Cap. So are we counting those as caps? Let's see how the rest goes. We may. All right, next. Again, match set. We both got a Hulk. I don't think they shuffled these very well. You got a cap, I got a Hulk. So now we've got four caps, four Hulks, if you include the previous days.
Three Hulks.
Three Hulks. I thought we'd gotten... I'd have to go check.
You got one Thor and two Hulks. I've got three caps.
All right.
So what, you got two Hulks today?
I got two Hulks today.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, in that case.
Oh, you got an Iron Man. I got a cap. I'll have to dig out the other ones and just see how many of what we got just to get the histogram going.
Okay, so I think you're at four Hulks, four caps, but finally.
One Iron Man. Iron Man. That's funny.
Okay, and then, we got everybody hanging out.
That's the thing with some of these, random draw kind of deals. It's one of those, if I wanted a particular one and I got to keep going back, I'm draining down their inventory.
Yes.
For stuff that we may not want to get the one we want or something.
Well, the funny thing is, I was thinking these wouldn't make half bad bookmarks.
True.
So,
true.
They're
not bad.
I mean thickness. They're a little thick for bookmarks.
They're a little thick for that.
But these are really nice, thick trading cards. I don't think they're meant to be used as trading cards. They're more, I guess I'd say, display cards. They're not your standard trading cards. To me, they're thicker.
Well, they're certainly not official trading cards. It flat out says that. They're a promotional novelty.
Yeah. But I like them. I like the thickness. I will say I like Cap. He's well done.
This is the kind of thing, if they were to do cards like this, particularly the thick stock glossy, that had like each of the different Rangers, Power Rangers on it over at Hasbro and stuff, I'd be all over that. Give me a full set of all of them.
Yeah.
You know? And they could use that to, you just want some? Okay, pick the one and get the inverse histogram based on your inventory at the end. See what you run out of.
Well, I did pick up, I picked up eight different books today. And
you're starting to get a better stack of books than you'd had before.
Yeah.
Still, I think it's drop in the bucket compared to what you've had some years.
Yes.
They're not giving out anywhere near as many as they used to.
No, a couple books. I've picked up either a copy for you, a copy for a friend's 8-year-old, that kind of thing. So I have duplicates of some books on purpose because, yes, I share, but like when we do a podcast on a book.
Yes. Yeah.
Each of us having a copy is really great. And it's funny because the 8-year-old's mom and I talked today and she said the 8-year-old had figured out where I was.
Oh, that's funny.
And had asked if I was coming home with a bag of books for her.
Has the 8-year-old figured out her mother's here too?
Working.
Yeah, I know.
And can't get to the booth. Yeah. So I am the treasured source.
That's funny.
Yeah, so I just, and she said she had assured her daughter that knowing me, I would be trying. But I love that A, kids love reading. And B, that there are quite a few booths, they're fueling that.
Yeah, I think having all-age material, having kid-friendly material, getting the kids engaged in the hobby and interested in the material is great. Mm-hmm. There were a couple of booths that I saw on the floor yesterday that I thought were not anywhere near all-age material or all-age family-friendly. Mm-hmm. Some to varying degrees than others. None that were flat out, okay, this is, pornographic or something.
Yeah.
But I think getting the younger audience engaged and stuff is good, making sure you can keep the older audience happy and stuff.
Yeah.
But I did notice today a lot of people are walking the floor, and while they may stop randomly, they're not really stopping and engaging with booths. Mm-hmm. Not that nobody is, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, but there's a lot more. And several people, because I stood in line at Stars, I stood in line for a few book signings, that kind of things. Several people I was in lines with today, they were asking me if I felt I was seeing more people than usual with that tunnel vision. Whether it's, I gotta get to the exclusive line, I gotta get to the panel, I gotta get to this place at this time, whatever the tunnel vision is caused by. People seem to be so intent on a destination, they aren't smelling the flowers along the way.
I totally get that, because there was one person I didn't talk to when I was doing the haul, but kind of, made eye contact with, and it's like, I'm moving, kind of a deal. and need to go back and, and still talk with. Didn't get to that today. But part of it is, I think, just information overload.
I had...
And so much to do in so little time.
Yeah, I had most of a migraine. Like, if we didn't leave the hall when we did, I was going to be in agony tonight.
Yeah. I think some of it, though, is from what I was seeing, particularly at the higher number end of the hall, people are there more for the celebrity sightings.
It really is starting to feel that way. I was hearing people talk about an event last night. It was $150 to get in. Mark Hamill attended, but every table, because there were tables of, I think they said 10 person tables, but every table got a swag bag. And it was like every person at the table got a matching swag bag. But they were saying four of the tables got a limited edition, only 40 of them exist, Golden Luke Skywalker Funko thing.
Hmm.
And that it's already gone up to, I'll get the value wrong, but it was like over $1,000.
I believe it.
And so they were saying that they had tried to get tickets to go in because from what they had heard, your swag bag was guaranteed to have a resale value of more than the $150 you paid to air.
I would be curious if there's any listener out there that is aware of a place that has current market value of past Comic-Con exclusives. And I don't mean necessarily even those chase things, but things like these artifact cards or...
I've got four unopened decks of Magic cards that were given out, a deck to every single person who got a badge years ago. They're unopened and they're all different colors.
I'm sure in my house, I've got various con swag going back two decades at least.
Yeah.
Some of which is going to be completely worthless, some of which may actually have some value. I'm curious.
Yeah. Well, in the case of the Magic cards, because friends from college and stuff had played Magic, I was like, you know, at some point I may need a gift for one of the friends who played Magic. So when people were going around swapping decks, that's when I made sure I ended up with one of each color.
Yeah.
With just the, if I'm ever going to give this as a gift to somebody, one of each color makes more sense than two red or two white. Or
I'm curious how much the value of some of that stuff. I think there's certain patterns it would follow. There's some instantly worthless because it's just cheap giveaway. Fine. Mm-hmm. People may be interested in it, but not monetary value-wise. Some is going to have stuff that goes up and up and up because it's truly rare, like the Luke Skywalker thing, of which only 40 exist. There's going to be some that goes up and then goes down as the interest, it becomes irrelevant. Mm-hmm. So I'm curious if there's anything that has that kind of price guide-ish value.
Yeah, it's a good question.
Because there's just so many freebies and handouts and stuff like that. Some of them are cool, some of them not so much. I have not seen or heard of any kind of cool giveaway from DC or Marvel.
Somebody was asking, did you go to Marvel and get, and I forget what it was, but apparently Marvel has had a few giveaways. Every time I've gotten within a row / aisle of Marvel, it's been a zoo, and I thought, you know what, I'll see what's happening there later.
But, I mean, this would have been a great year for DC to be giving out Legion Flight Rings. They've got the comic coming up. Plus, two or three of the shows have had Legionnaires in them.
I would love to have a Legion flight ring.
Yes. We were talking with somebody. He's like, this would be the place I want to have Spider-Man's web shooters and just swing from place to place. I'm like, I was thinking, yeah, cool, cool. But man, flight ring, nothing else. Make your backpack weightless. Good day. Fair amount of walking. Probably did more yesterday than today because I was in three panels at least.
Maybe that's why I shouldn't have figured this year was a go light on the panels, go heavy on the check-in with friends, walk the floor, enjoy the booths. My feet might be happier with me if I'd gone with your plan.
Yeah. There's a couple of panels I'm thinking about tomorrow, but all of them are easy to skip and I might. I'm debating if I want to walk the floor again. Might do the camera, probably won't. Just it's so crowded. I'm getting jostled around so much. Mm-hmm. But I may start at maybe the low numbers and work my way up into the high numbers. I don't know. I got to spend a little time tonight figuring out what the game plan for tomorrow is. pretty much I've done everything I really had set out to do as a checklist. There's a few places I do want to circle back to. I just need to think that through.
Nice.
So with that, I think we'll call it a night for tonight. We've got one day left of con. It's a shorter day. They close at 5. And then I think we're planning on doing dinner with some friends afterwards and comparing notes with them, see how their con went.
Yeah. I hope all of them have had just as good con as we have, because this has been a nice con.
It's been a good con, good conversations with some people, and again, things like the Discovery signing were really cool.
Yeah.
It is Sunday evening, and Comic-Con 2019 is over, and we have survived.
Yay!
Always nice to have that happen.
Yes.
We got up this morning, had breakfast, once again, saw Austin St. John at the hotel, which is kind of funny. Saw him, did not interact with him. I try not to bother these kinds of people when they're at their hotel or they're not kind of on stage, if you will. I think it's kind of rude.
Yeah.
But he seemed pretty low-key. We headed out. On the way, we decided to make a stop or a side excursion just a little bit because we were curious. Again, we're staying at Liberty Station. On the other side of the convention center a little ways is Barrio House.
From what I could tell on Google Maps, it's about 8/10 of a mile walk from the convention center. And that's from Hall H, basically. So the closer side of the convention center.
Yeah, which still involves crossing Harbor Drive and going a ways. And we drove there just to see what it was like. And got into that neighborhood, which again, not one of the nicer parts of town. Not, oh my God, horrible, but a lot of homeless shelters, a lot of actual services for the homeless and stuff, which is good. I appreciate that. Sorry those people are in need of it, but I'm glad that they're being taken care of.
St. Vincent de Paul's Father Joe's Village looked quite nice. And given that something we were familiar with when we lived out here and we actively supported, I enjoyed seeing that.
Some people fall into hard times, and given the economy we've had over the last few decades or whatever, there are a lot of times where some people are going to have hard times making the bills meet and stuff, can get into a bad situation. Getting somewhere that can help them get out of that is important. But putting a Comic-Con venue in that area, particularly one they've paid $6+ million for, interesting choice. Not sure what exactly led to that. I think there was going to be another convention center sort of thing in that neighborhood that this was going to be like right next to that just fell through. But when we drove by, and we did that at what, 10:30?
Mm-hmm. 10:30, so basically on the fourth day of con, an hour and a half before it was opening for the day.
Yeah, because Barrio House was only open from noon until 2. And
each day of con.
Each day of con. Each full day of con, yes. Not preview night. So 2 hours a day. And again, an hour and a half before, there was like zero sign of it being the least bit convention related at all.
And we don't just mean people. We mean we didn't see a Comic-Con logo.
I mean, literally no signs saying come here for the con or line up here or anything of the sort.
This is the door you're looking for. Yeah.
This is more than just a door. It's a door to a specific something or other.
Mm-hmm.
Now, again, maybe in the hour and a half between then and when the panels started there, something magical happened.
I guess I was expecting to see signs because it's the fourth day. And I was thinking they would have something on the door, something on the window, something they weren't having to take down and put up every day.
Let's put this into perspective of a couple of years back when we spent the morning at the library. We got there early. There was tons of sign of this is a con venue.
Mm-hmm.
Here's where to go, badges are or aren't needed, you know, all that kind of a stuff. Now, granted, that was for the library versus a nondescript building in the middle of nowhere, but it felt a little odd.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know how exactly they were using that venue or how many people went to that venue.
I think my concern, we drove by because I wanted to see where it is, see what it was like, and get a feel for what the walk would be.
Yes.
I couldn't get a feel for what the walk would be because of the road closures.
When we went from there back to the convention center, we got shuttled from road to road to road as we were just trying to get back to where we could park the car and stuff. Because there were enough road closures, yeah.
Yeah, that gave me the impression that if I was an ADA person with walker, wheelchair, whatever, it felt like it would have been difficult to get to, particularly if I had needed you to drive me over, drop me off, and put the car back where it had been.
I would say, on the other hand, you could have taken the shuttle there, but there were no shuttles to there.
Yeah.
Just like there were no shuttles to the Comic-Con Museum, which was part of the reason we never went there. Plus, the hours were literally the same as the exhibit hall.
Yeah. So, for me, it was twofold. Get a feel for the distance, the walk, but also trying to be aware of your environment, what type of walk this would be. And what I noticed, and it's been an increasing problem slash situation with Con, and part of how they've dealt with it is the road closures. Now, so much of Fifth, for instance, is a pedestrian walkway. So many people at Con treat the streets like they're walking on Main Street at Disneyland.
Yeah, when we pulled towards the parking garage finally this morning, there were people actually walking in the street, and I'm like, I'm trying to drive here.
Yeah.
So it was a little annoying.
Well, it's frustrating because there's a police officer directing traffic, directing pedestrians, telling pedestrians to stay on the sidewalk, and they're so excited about Comic-Con, they're so focused on what they want to do at Comic-Con, that they no longer seem to be interacting with the real world as the real world.
Yes.
So now I take that impression of what's going on, and I apply it to this 0.8-mile walk through unfamiliar territory that doesn't have the police.
That's outside that Comic-Con bubble.
Yes. Yeah. It doesn't have people directing traffic. It doesn't have volunteers guiding the way. I don't think it had any kind of arrows on the sidewalk saying, follow me, but I'm not sure on that.
I didn't see any sign of it. Not to say there wasn't any sign, but there was none that I noticed.
Yeah. And I just wonder what that walk would have been like.
I'm curious how many people went to that venue, what they thought of it, and the walk back and forth.
Yeah.
I
mean, they advertised it as a little over a 10-minute walk. That's what people kept telling me. And I kept thinking, 0.8 mile, I don't walk that in 10 minutes. My pebble is forever telling me I do not walk that in 10 minutes.
Even if you do, that's if you know exactly where you're going. And there didn't seem to be a straight shot to it or an obvious take this, take that.
Mm-hmm.
As a matter of fact, I'd have to look through the quick guide to see if they even gave instructions. Go down the street, turn left, turn right, or whatever.
Mm-hmm. I would love to hear from someone who went to Barrio House what the experience was like from the moment they made the decision to go to Barrio House, walked the walk, what the experience was like there, and the walk back.
Yeah, I'm curious, like I said, what the attendance of that kind of stuff was. I thought it was bad enough at the library.
Mm-hmm.
And that was way closer.
Yes.
So, and that took us 15, 20 minutes to get to once you count crossing the street of Harbor Drive and such. You've got to figure getting to Barrio House was probably, all said and done, closer to a half hour.
I was going to say Barrio House felt to be at least twice as far away. So, yeah.
Yeah. Hopefully it worked out for them. Hopefully people enjoyed the panels they went to.
Yeah.
The fact it was only open for 2 panels a day struck me as odd.
It struck me as testing the waters.
And it struck me as justifying the purchase.
There is that, but I guess to me, if you're testing the waters on somewhere that far from the convention center, I'd rather you had an incredible track for one whole day.
I was going to say, do a single day track.
Because to me, that justifies the walk, the time, the investment.
If it had been on Saturday, here's a bunch of stuff back to back that if you like one of it, you'll love all of it.
Yeah.
And that's not the route they went.
Yeah.
So live and learn, and maybe they made the right choice. Maybe what we're suggesting wouldn't have been the right choice, but I'm curious.
Yeah. Nobody I talked to had gone over to Barrio House. Several people I talked to hadn't even seen it in the information because it's brand new this year.
Yeah.
And we were talking with friends over there about the fact that you have some people who have been coming for years on end, and they do I don't want to say they do the same thing every year because that's not a good expression of it.
No, but I heard enough people in the hall in past days of, oh, it's the same as last year.
But to me, that's a, I do the exhibit hall every year. I talked to one girl. I do the exhibit hall every year because I know I can find out about the panels online.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the best use of my time. I talked to one person who I spend at least one day at the activations outside because this is the only place I ever go that has anything like that.
Fair enough.
Such a unique experience. It's like, okay, I get that. I talked to one person who amused me endlessly. Their way of dealing with the lack of benches and places to sit was, when I'm tired, when I want to loiter, when I can't decide what to do, I look for one of the mega booths with a line. Now must be time to stand in line because I need to figure out a game plan, or I wish I could be sitting.
Somewhere where I can think through my game plan and not be told to just keep moving.
Yes.
In some years, I've gone to panels at that point if I just need to get off my feet.
Yeah. It to me, it was an interesting attitude. I hadn't really thought of the lines in that context.
I will say this year, like last year, I did a lot better on the walking around in terms of how my feet and my legs did. No blisters. The feet weren't, I mean, they were tired, but they weren't killing me. And I've had a couple of years, man, after preview night, it's like I can't walk.
I think some of that is we've been improving our health. Some of that is we learn from past years. There was a time in our lives when, emotionally, I'll phrase it that way, we couldn't justify walking all the way to the car to drop the books I'd picked up for free. Because, I mean, are they really that heavy? Are there really that many? And it's quite a ways to the car. Now, at noon, I don't mind texting you and saying, I've picked up enough books. I need to take them to the car. Do you have stuff that needs to go to the car? Do you want to go with me? Do you want me to take your stuff?
Well, and the fact that we had drinks there certainly didn't hurt. And the fact that we essentially had to import our own chairs from Texas to have somewhere to sit during the day.
But the fact that less than 2 hours in, I'm willing to say the things I've picked up are heavy enough. I'm willing to go walk to put them aside.
Yes.
And start over. That's something that 15 years ago, I was saying, oh, I'm sure I can handle carrying these a few more hours.
Certainly as I'm getting older, the walking around, the lugging the stuff is not working as well for me. I would say overall I am in better shape, but like last year, it got to the point where my back was just starting to hurt a little bit walking around all day. And this time when we did that noon stop back at the car to drop some stuff, I not only took out the couple of comics I'd picked up or whatever, I actually took the cameras out of my backpack. And it's like, I'm not using these. They're staying here. Because I brought the 360 camera, the batteries, and one or two things, thinking, oh, maybe I'll take footage. But literally, we were in the hall for all of maybe 5 minutes. And I'm like, yeah, not going to happen. I would love to have good 360 photos of the whole floor. But when I'm sitting there getting jostled around in the crowd, it's like I'm not going to get anything but people's backs and getting bumped into.
Well, I keep hoping that the fact that so many of these booths were three people deep right at the booth means people were buying, people were interested, that this was a good year for the vendors.
We heard from a couple of people that they had a good con in that respect. We heard from somebody in Artist Alley. We heard from somebody in Small Press, somebody in the exhibit hall floor. And I think they did. Just looking at their tables and such, they clearly sold some stuff.
Yeah.
But there were also other times where just watching the people in the hall, there were many, many, many more people just walking along, glancing.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say at least, I'm going to say 100-to-1 difference between the number of people, oh, wait, did you do this? Or, hey, what is this? Or and those that just moved on without even blinking.
Today was officially Kids Day, as Sunday always is.
Although it didn't feel as much of a Kids Day as past Sundays have.
In some respects, I totally agree. For me, skimming the programming, it didn't really feel Kids Day. A couple things like that. But like the Scholastic booth had two different characters come in and pose for photos with the kids. Peppa Pig. And I've forgotten the name of the other, but that was really popular with the kids, and the kids were excited and lining up for that.
I'm not going to say I spent a ton of time at the Nickelodeon booth this year, but last year and years before, I noticed numerous times they would have either voice actors doing signing or people in costumes or Power Rangers, the actors, whatever. And certainly the Power Rangers would show, the suit actors would show up a lot.
Yes.
Didn't notice that at all this year.
Yeah, I wasn't around Nickelodeon much this year, but I wasn't hearing the shouts from that area, if you know what I mean.
I don't even recall them having the section at the front of the booth like they had in past years, which was a clear stage for autographs and stuff like that.
Interesting. Well, what got me thinking about Kids Day was actually the book publisher areas.
Yeah.
There were quite a few publishers. They put the kids' books out on the ends, on the aisles, where the kids will see them. And what I enjoyed was seeing a lot of conversations, like half dozen to a dozen, where the parents had pulled the book down, were flipping through the pages with the kids, saying, do you like this? Is something this something you're really going to read? Is this something you want? And the parents were getting the kids engaged enough. And by, you know, engaged enough to see, do you really want this or was it a shiny object that drew you over?
I take that as the parent wondering, is it worth the wait to lug to the car?
But the parents were buying the books because the kids were getting excited and the excitement was ramping up.
And again, I think if you take a kid to this kind of a convention, you're hoping to spark the imagination, to have them attach or interact with a property, to learn something, to get excited about it, and you know, come out of it as either a fan of something or at least interested in something. Mm-hmm. And that's a win.
Well, I picked up a few things for you during my roaming today that hopefully will be good choices.
Yeah, you picked up a couple of interesting things. You got...
By saying that, I should note, they were all handed to me for the amazing price of free.
Yes, even better. See, the first thing you got was a Lost in Space Countdown to Danger Volume 1 for the Netflix version. We still have not watched the Netflix Lost in Space.
Yeah.
It's on the list. It's only 10 episodes. We need to find the time. So there was that. There was, from DC, they had a Watchmen Special Edition comic, which I think just reprints the first issue. Yeah, I think it reprints the first thing and then points you to the graphic novel.
Okay.
Which is a good thing just in general, and then with Doomsday Clock slowly eking out is also worthwhile. In a smart move on their part, they also did a Batwoman special edition. This is by Rucka and J.H. Williams, presumably reprinting the either first or zero issue of that. It's Elegy Part 1, or Elegy... I can't pronounce that word. A-G-I-T-A-T. It's the font.
Agitato?
Agitato, we'll say that. Anyways, it's whatever Rucka and Williams did whenever they did that. And it's first, it's interesting. It says it features the first chapter of the Batwoman Elegy graphic novel. It's like it's the first issue of the comic they got collected. And then we've got a Batman Earth 1 special preview edition that does the first part of that hardcover. And that actually is a graphic novel. And then they've got the Year of the Villain number 1. I'm pretty sure that was a Free Comic Day special. So a number of things from DC. And then you did really well. I'll start with the less of the impressive ones. From Comicology Original, The Stone King, which is an Eisner nominee.
I will say the cover art kind of drew me to that one.
Yeah. But then the other one that I've actually been wanting to read for a while is Elephant Man Death of Shorty, which is, again, a Comixology original. Elephant Man used to be in print. When that stopped, I stopped reading it. I don't tend to buy digital comics.
Mm-hmm.
I got nothing against them. I like them. It's just, it always feels more like I'm paying to rent them, even though you kind of sort of own them.
Well, I have concerns when it comes to digital collections, digital media, in terms of you buy it, they say you own it. A certain e-reader ebook service went out of business. They said they transferred all my ebooks to the service that bought them out, And when the transfer was complete, I was sent an apology that that service didn't actually own the rights for 40% of my book collection.
You go through an experience like that, or the comics on the web that CrossGen did that vaporized with them, mm-hmm. and you start to get a little more skeptical.
Yeah. And, well, they, with that email apology, it was, you know, the last device you downloaded them on, as long as that's in working order, you can still read them.
Yeah, but there comes a point where you're not going to be using the same e-reader, you know, 5, 10 years later or whatever. Yeah. So this is a good stack of reading material. I'm particularly interested, like I said, in that Elephant Men one. And I also today, I spent the day walking the floor. Did not do methodical aisle by aisle, but just kind of crisscrossed and bounced around depending, you know, what mood I was in.
To me, Sundays are a good day to be driven by the mood, to check in with friends, to go back and look at things that caught your eye earlier and kind of get your second reaction to them.
Yeah. Well, one of the things I did today was finally made it over to the Anomaly Productions booth while Brian Haberlin was there. Chatted with him for a few minutes, told him, you know, hey, both my co-host and I really loved what they did with Sonata. Not only great art, but man, you nailed the story, which he was pleased to hear. And he gave me a copy of The Marked number one, which is about a coven of witches that their spells are tattooed on them.
Mm.
And visually, it's very stunning. You know, I got full issue to read. No doubt will be one of the things I do for the next preview spotlight, because it's the cover feature of previews.
Ah, nice.
And it was interesting because in his panel the other day he was talking about this is one of the advantages of not self-publishing. Those covers are given out contractually. DC gets so many, Marvel gets so many, Image gets so many, or whatever. And it's the first time he's been on the cover of previews in quite some time. This is a guy who's worked for Todd McFarlane Productions, who was one of the creators of Witchblade, and who's been around the block. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was, getting the copy was cool. Talking with him was cool. He's a great guy. And he's also got some stuff coming out in November of kind of how-to stuff with augmented reality.
Mm.
And he equated some of what they're doing to like what they used to do in Wizard with the here's how to draw, you know, and they'll get like Walt Portasio to show some stuff. But instead of like what they did in Wizard where it's just, okay, he did this, and a little bit of that, with augmented reality, you put your tablet or phone on top of it with the app, you can then click the video and watch the guy draw the stuff.
Nice.
So he's apparently shown it off at some of the retailer summits and stuff like that, and everybody's just been amazed by it.
Very cool.
Does not surprise me. He does not hold back with the augmented reality stuff. And what's cool is even without that technological aspect of it, you still have a damn fine product.
Mm-hmm.
Because I didn't, and I'm pretty sure James didn't play around with any of the augmented reality features of Sonata when we reviewed it. So there's an entire another level of that book that was already brilliant.
Yeah.
To go have. So chatted with him for a bit. That's always fun. At some point, I need to figure out, can I take one of his classes or whatever on, you know, how he does stuff? Because he was talking about how, even on a bad day, he's getting through like 2 pages a day.
Nice.
On a good day, 4 to 6. 20-page comic, you're flying through that compared to most people.
Yeah.
And he was saying the genesis of all of this is back in the Image days, he was watching people. They'd be grinding the midnight oil, putting in 15-hour days, and still be late.
Yeah.
And it's like you're killing yourself, you're killing your product, you're killing the story momentum.
Mm-hmm.
And it's pulp entertainment.
Yeah.
It's meant to be. And you could argue this either way, done quickly, read quickly, and move on. It's not like every comic has to be this masterpiece. It's got to be good. It's got to be solid. It's got to have the return on the investment.
But one of the things about pulp entertainment, from my perspective, is it's fuel for the imagination.
Yes. It's something that you've got to have as much pragmatism as, you know, principle and perfectionism. And it's not that he's just slapping stuff out there and seeing what sticks. He's putting care and attention to it, but also moving through it at a quick enough pace. He's not trying to get every panel absolutely perfect.
Yeah.
And the upshot of that was, in the case of Sonata, an issue that both James and I felt was perfect.
Yeah.
And is going to be followed by a second issue, a third, etc.
Nice.
You know, versus some where maybe the creator thought it was perfect and we, the audience, not so much. And we're still waiting on that second or third issue.
Mm-hmm.
So his panels are worth going to. I think he's done some better ones in past years than this. They were still good. But there have been some other years where I just took copious notes. He was showing just a ton of, here's how to do digital inking. Here's how to take a poser thing, do the art, boom, boom, boom. And he's practically waving a magic wand as he does this, it looks like. But you're like, wow, I can see where he's doing this. I can see where he's going with this. I can see more of the process.
Mm-hmm.
This was, I think, more of a theory kind of a year for him in terms of his panels.
Interesting.
But it was good stuff. Enjoyed talking with him. Talked, we went back over to see Darren over at Sid Comics.
I think he had a good con.
Looked that way. Looked like a lot less material on his table.
In a good way.
In a good way. He, in other words, he'd sold quite a bit. A number of people, I think, while we were there were noticing it and taking mm-hmm. interest. So he seemed to be happy with that. And I think he made the right choice of waiting until he had three or four issues of a number of titles before doing a table. And I think he made the right choice of doing it in small press versus a full-on booth. Definite difference in cost there. Mm-hmm. And I think few publishers that aren't at the Marvel, DC, Dark Horse, Image, you know, IDW, Oni and stuff, unless you're at that upper echelon, it doesn't make sense to have a full table or a full booth.
Yeah.
I think having a table makes more sense. Because in small press, that's where people are looking for that kind of material. And one of the tables over by the kids' book you liked on the front wall.
Oh, over by... Oh, I am tired. Candlewick.
Candlewick. Thank you. I knew it started with a C. A few booths over was, I want to say Future Dude or something like that. Bliss on Tap, maybe? They did a comic that I read for a little bit but kind of fell out of. It was like a time travel thing. And they had a good location, but they didn't have, I think, a lot of people stopping and noticing.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't think that's what people were kind of, Bliss on Tap. We're looking for at that part of the hall.
Yeah.
I think location's always important. I think on the hall floor, even more so. You know, if you were artists that had your own table, or own booth, I mean, not in Artist Alley, not in small press, there's certain areas like at the hall DEG area, that's where you want to be, in that front block. There's some others where, okay, but you're more kind of, because you're quasi self-publishing or whatever, like where Tom Zoller was.
Yeah.
Exhibit A is, and a bunch of other smaller press. That makes sense. But it was interesting. Anyways, I think Darren seemed like a good con, seemed happy with it, which I'm glad to hear. I think he's doing great stuff. I think he's really got the right price point and page count to really get noticed and have a good return on the investment. Because that's where I think a lot of things are struggling. And I think the industry is going to be hard-pressed to make that next price point jump from $3.99 to $4.99. Mm-hmm. Just because of it. That's a lot of money for a fifth or a sixth of a story.
Yeah.
And the math just stops working. And there was pushback on the $3.99 price point. So let's see. We talked to him. What else? We swung by the Power Morphicon booth just for a bit. There was one ranger that seemed to be there every time I ever went by the thing, and that was the one who was the Silver Operation Overdrive ranger. Not a bad actor, but not... It doesn't look as much like he did in the show. He's got dark hair, used to have blonde or whatever in the show. And I'm not going to say he was one of those standout rangers, of which, admittedly, they're not tons. But even that season is not one that I hear, oh yeah, that was great kind of a thing. It wasn't bad. I enjoyed it, but...
Well, and you were telling me every time you went by the Power Morphicon booth, there was at least one, frequently two rangers signing.
Well, that one was always there.
Well, yes, that, but...
But we saw today, Austin St. John was there, the original red Mighty Morphin Ranger. I went back at one point, and it was...
Mejia?
Yeah, Brendan Mejia. Thank you. I was blanking on his name. The red Dino Charge Ranger. He was the one that we'd seen, one of many we saw at Power Morphicon Express.
Mm-hmm.
He is crazy personable. I like watching his YouTube channel. And he did the How to Move Like a Power Ranger thing at Power Morphicon, complete with doing the handstand walk down the bleachers.
Nice.
I mean, the guy is just crazy good shape. And we saw another one there. We saw Walter Jones, the original Black Power, Mighty Morphin Power Ranger there a few days ago.
I saw him at a different booth.
We saw him at the back of the hall at another one. And
I saw one of the Rangers that I will not be able to give name, season, anything for, but he also had bit part on One Tree Hill, which was also listed on the placard. Mm-hmm. But he was signing at Boom for some reason.
Boom does the Power Ranger comic.
Ah, okay. I'm pretty sure he was at Boom. I could be wrong. He was at one of the comic publishers.
I would think Boom.
He was at... Now I'm wondering if I saw him at Dark Horse. This is why walking the floor so much can be confusing.
Yeah.
But anyways, he was on the floor too.
Yeah, anyways, there are a fair number of Power Rangers represented and such. I'm trying to remember who the other one was I saw. It was, I thought, another Red Ranger. I'm curious how many were there, what they were doing and stuff. That's something that I thought I had checked Ranger Board, one of the main Power Ranger message boards, and didn't see a whole lot. But some of that doesn't happen until, I think, after we leave town to get here.
About 4 o'clock today, we went up under the sails, and while hoping to meet up with a friend, we briefly walked the autograph area. That was the first time I did that this year, and I was surprised to realize how much it had shrunk since the last time I spent a lot of time up there.
I walked through, because that was in the under the sails area, I walked through that a couple of mornings, but just on the way to a panel. And never noticed big lines or any kind of, ooh, something's going on over there.
But I just mean there were fewer tables for autographs.
Definitely fewer tables. I think noticeably fewer tables. Did not see any sign of some of the regulars, Herb Jefferson Jr., who played Boomer in the original Galactica, those kinds of people.
Yeah.
And I think some of that is the kinds of people that had been up there we were starting to see on the floor.
True.
Because in past years, we'd see a couple of Power Rangers there last year or two. We would see, I mean, all that kind of stuff is now happening on the hall floor. That's, again, where Cast of Discovery signed, where Patrick Stewart signed. I think today, was that the day we both walked past Kevin Smith at one of the booths?
Yes. But frequently, the big names that were brought by a company have been down on the floor, and it was the people who brought themselves that were up under the sails.
Yeah, I'm seeing more signings at booths, making me wonder if it's draining from up there. I just don't know, because it did not look...
And it's a valid thing. I'm just wondering if some of these people who are bringing themselves have gotten to know some of the exhibitors, like Walter Jones, who was signing a booth on the back wall. Okay. Because the difference between signing down on the floor and signing up under the sails is, last I checked, Comic-Con still had a policy.
Gotta give one free upstairs.
Yeah.
I think you get a different crowd at the two places.
Definitely.
You get the autograph seekers, the people wanting to stand in a long line, and downstairs you get the, oh, that's so-and-so. That's cool.
Mm-hmm.
And it was interesting because I was watching, like, at the Power Morphicon Express booth, they had just a couple of people they were talking to. It's not like there was a line.
Yeah.
But when they would leave, somebody else would wander by, that kind of stuff. And it was a slow, steady kind of a trickle or whatever. Enough to justify being there and such, but not, oh my God. Enough that if they had been up under the sails, it would have been a little awkward.
Yes. Well, there have been times when the autograph area has been in places where the people doing the autographs have complained, nobody's going to find me here.
Yeah.
Which is why they all want to be on the floor. And, I mean, let's backtrack 20 plus years probably. They were on the floor way back when. And when they first got moved to the sails, that was a big upset.
Yeah, but we also had some times where we'd talk to some people that were in that kind of autograph thing on the floor, had wonderful discussions with them. Tomi Amidala from Stargate is one of them.
Jason Carter, Robin Atkin-Downs, several of the Babylon 5 actors.
Yeah, I didn't notice any Babylon 5 presence at all.
Mm-mm.
I mean, J. Michael Straczynski, I think, was around somewhere. But it's funny, there are certain aspects of fandom that hit big, and I don't want to say fade away, but you've got to look a little harder to go find.
No, but there was a time when JMS, if he did a panel, he would just keep saying, give me your biggest room, give me your biggest room, because if I have a panel, my people will come.
That was during the Babylon 5 days, absolutely, and he packed the place.
Mm-hmm.
He was one of those that, at his height of that, him, John Barrowman at his height, I'm trying to think, there's one or two others like that, they could just fill a decent-sized room.
Yeah.
It's the kind of thing, if you'd put them, Kevin Smith, and like one or two others, you could have just drained the hall floor if you weren't careful, or if you were careful and wanted to do that. What else did I do? I did a fair amount of walking, checked by a couple of other booths, had a good discussion with Ashton at Diamond. It was funny, because while we were sitting there talking, she'd apparently gotten the question she'd gotten a bunch of times before. Oh, can I buy these? No, we're a distributor. We just sell them to the stores. We're just displaying them. And then they'd put a statue over in that area near where they had the spinner wheel.
For a contest.
And a lot of people wanted photos with the thing.
Mm-hmm.
So that was interesting. And of course, they'd stop the spinner for a bit. So, oh, when can I line up for the spinner? That kind of a thing. It was funny. But had a good conversation with her. She'd gotten time to walk the hall floor yesterday some, so she'd gotten to do some of her shopping, was very happy with what she had found and stuff. It's nice when you see people in the industry that are true geeks at heart.
Yes.
And enjoy the industry they work in.
I talked to one exhibitor today, and he was asking me how I was doing. I said, I'm doing pretty good. I mean, it's quite the crowd. He said, it's been quite the crowd every day. And I said, yes, but you have this nice boundary between you, safe in your booth, and the mosh pit.
Yes.
And he said, and I am grateful. Don't mistake me. I go out in the mosh pit periodically. I wander. I enjoy. And then I return to the land of safety.
I will say that this year, I think the crowds were some of the worst we've ever had at con. There have been some years where, man, if you're near like the ABC booth when they're doing a sudden signing or something like that, you just have gotten crushed in past years. I felt a little less of that crush of humanity, but I felt a ton more of the constant bounced around by it.
Yes.
I had one time, and this was over in the small exhibitor table area at the low number end. Matter of fact, I think I was heading back to the Power Morphicon booth to see what was going on there. And I'm walking that back aisle in that corner, and I got this guy's shoulder right into my, you know, chest type thing. And it's just, hey, we bumped into each other. Not a big deal, but a little bit of force behind that. And again, enough other times where I just can't get where I'm going and I'm getting bounced around. People aren't looking where their backpack's going. They got a poster tube out the backpack.
Yeah.
And it was in places that historically had been vacant at most times of the con.
Mm-hmm.
Over in the Golden Silver Age Pavilion, over in, you know, other areas that...
Yeah, I didn't find vacant areas this year.
No. And if so, only intermittently for a few seconds before the next wave came in. So I think it's definitely a lot more crowded. And in some cases, I think we've seen people do well with that in terms of turnover merchandise, whatever. Other cases, I was hearing complaints of, well, there was a lot of lines blocking my booth and that didn't work out at certain times.
Yeah.
And I noticed a lot more kind of center lines in that middle divide, although we've had some past years where that was definitely the case. Two or three deep at the far walls, the number of lines to go get the freebie, whatever. People got to be somewhere. I get that.
I nearly got crushed at one point today because there was a line basically coming towards me that I wasn't trying to get in. I was trying to skirt around. And I had no idea that there was a line behind me that people were jumping into.
Oh.
And suddenly I'm smushed between two lines. I'm like, I'm just trying to go down the aisle and get out of your way.
One of the things that causes me kind of the most leg fatigue is having to do the sudden stops, the sudden last minute pivot to get around somebody who's just darted in front of me or off to the side or whatever.
I feel like I do a lot of bobble and swerve.
Yeah.
I recommend anyone planning to go to a major convention, get your legs in good shape before you go.
And make sure you've got a good kind of sense of balance.
Yes.
At a couple of times, I felt I was almost going to tip over because I had to do a sudden swerve to avoid somebody.
Yeah. Good shoes, good socks.
Absolutely. I make a habit every year before con of getting a fresh pair of socks for every day for the con. You know, get them through the wash, but they've got to have the maximum amount of cushioning they can. New pair of shoes a couple of weeks before con, so I've had time to break them in. This pair did great. I get the aerosol cushion type stuff. That's part of, again, why I think my feet have done really well this year.
Yeah.
Losing weight over the last year or two certainly has helped a ton. And it's a lot of walking.
It is. Today, I think my step counter got up over 14,000 steps.
Yeah. And for me, the walking, again, is doing all right. But I guess I'm just not used to being on my feet all day. And the back starts to lower back a little bit higher than that. I start to feel it. Even if, because like even in the afternoon, the backpack wasn't heavy. And it wasn't the backpack that was doing it. It's just, I got a desk job. I'm used to sitting around all day. So, overall, it was a good convention. It was a fun convention. But I went in today knowing I wanted to go chat with a couple of people, you know, check in with Tom Zoller. Because we spent quite a bit of time talking with him. And I always enjoy that. He's got a great sense of story. And it's fun to hear what stories his, you know, movies, TV, whatever, had worked for him. What did he think? And, oh, he came at it from this angle. And it's like, I hadn't thought about it, but I can see exactly where he's coming from. And where, if I had had that thought going in or early on, it would have, yeah, I would have gone down that similar train of thought or whatever.
Well, we had talked about Discovery early on with him. At one point, somebody walked by wearing a shirt from Discovery with the disco on. And I'm like, I know how I felt when I saw that in the show, but I kind of wonder. So I asked him and he's like, well, my answer. And I could just tell from the way he was doing it of.
It's funny because I don't dislike the disco shirt. It just isn't Trek.
I don't like it in the place it is, if that makes sense.
If it were a fan shirt.
Yes.
Okay. That's clever.
Yes.
But yeah.
Yeah. So it was kind of funny, though, because I could tell he's like, I know what I want to say. I know I don't want to offend you or the person wearing it. You know, and he was kind of working through the same thing I was, where he was saying in universe versus outside the universe of Trek.
Yeah. Well, and it's funny. You were saying he didn't want to offend anybody. Or he's a thoughtful kind of a guy. We were near another area. I don't want to say who. Was in the Artist Alley area. And basically there were these two people just ripping on Discovery. And it's not that I necessarily disagree with what they were saying, but there was an aspect of it of, you know, I've got other places I could probably be right now.
Yeah. Well, and not a constructive word in. That
not
I was
they could have done this or why didn't they do that? You know,
Yeah. Those are the conversations that I enjoy. If you didn't enjoy something, tell me what you would have enjoyed. Tell me what would have made it better, because I'll probably enjoy hearing about that.
Well, there have been times I'll look at something, be it a cover of a comic, a story about it, and I'm like, I looked at it, I thought this. If they'd done this, I think they would have had a little more success getting me to think what they wanted me to think. You know, they could have tried this or whatever. And there are other times where it's, I didn't like it. And when I get that vibe from people, that gets a little off-putting. It was funny because at one of Haberlin's panels, he was talking about the cover to Sonata. And this is, again, kind of a how-to session. He's asking the crowd, what's wrong with this cover? Somebody said, oh, well, you know, the image focused on this. Maybe it should focus on that. He's like, no. And finally, he takes that comic, puts another comic in front of it. The Sonata logo is on the bottom, so it's now clearly blocked. And this is how they rack comics.
Yes.
Oh, you know.
Yeah.
And it's not just, ooh, I didn't like this. It's there's a functional reason behind certain things.
Yeah.
And again, if you give constructive feedback or at least why it didn't work for you, you know, it can make a difference. I'm trying to think where else I hit on the floor today. Because there's still a couple of people I didn't wind up talking to this year. It's just getting to that part of the floor where they were at was either too much of a hassle or too crowded or whatever. It was just too noisy. And there were a couple of places and times where it's like, you know, I just, it was taking more effort to get where I wanted to go than seemed to be worthwhile.
Yeah. It's impossible to do everything.
Oh, yeah.
Or everything I want to do at con.
Even crowds aside, I think that's true. But adding the crowds, and I find that kind of experience very draining.
Mm-hmm.
So getting to the car midday just to cool our heels, sit down and have a soda or something helped. And just the constant kind of roar of the crowd.
Yes.
It was one point where I was watching somebody interviewing somebody on the hall floor. And I'm like, I've been there, done that.
Mm-hmm.
And you can get some great interviews sometimes. This was at least one in the back of a booth, not with somebody who's trying to, you know, deal with the crowd interactions. But yeah, not for me. Part of it is I just don't want to lug around the equipment and do that. And part of it is I'm not the interviewer type.
I get that.
But
there's also the sound quality and the distractions. They're going to happen constantly.
Yeah, the shiny walks by, ooh, costume, let me take photo, pause for that kind mm-hmm. of a thing. And sometimes that can work in an interview, other times not so much.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, it comes down to how much respect is the interviewee really paying to being interviewed?
Yeah.
And in this particular case, the guy was in the interview and that's where he was. And I respect that.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen other times where that's not the case. And again, you know, time is your most precious commodity at one of these conventions. And how you spend it determines what you get out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And different people go in with different agendas. I want to go get these exclusives. I want to go buy this. I want to go find this. I want to go talk to somebody. I want to experience this.
Yeah.
And I try to go in with very meager expectations in all of that. And there's some of the con that I will do once we get home.
Mm-hmm.
I will probably go through the various emails and find out what was reported by The Beat, by CBR, by Newsarama, by Chuck Rosansky, by other people who've covered the con. That's where I'll get the lowdown on all the Marvel movie plans, on you know what DC announced and stuff like that. And because that stuff, I don't necessarily need to be in the room when it happens.
Yeah.
At one point today, I was getting asked on Slack, and I understand the nature of the question. Well, John, what do you think of the Phase 4 Marvel movie plans? And my response is basically, I've skimmed it, but haven't really given it any thought.
Mm-hmm.
I'm at con.
Yeah.
I'm in sensory overload type thing to think, ooh, should they have done this or what would I have done in that place?
Well, and the people that were in the room had lined up for hours, which is hours you spent either in other panels or on the hall floor.
Yes. Here were people on Slack that were getting it off the internet in a nice, quiet, controlled environment of their own. I was skimming it on my phone in bits and pieces kind of a deal in the midst of chaos.
Yeah.
And part of it is, and we've talked about this before, there's the con you plan to go to, the con you go to, the con your friends go to, and the con you hear about afterwards, mm-hmm. if not a few other cons. And invariably, when I get back to the office, I'm going to have people, oh, you were there when they announced thus and so.
Yeah.
And I've explained to my coworkers many times that the building we work in, if you stretch that the 8 blocks to the freeway, that's the size of the convention center. Oh, you go another block or two in every direction to get the various hotels and other venues. It'd be like me saying, well, you were in the office last week. Were you in all those meetings that happened in every conference room at every time? No, of course not.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's one of those things that even if you are within 20 feet of something, because it would not shock me if when we had wandered off our different ways, when you walked by the Kevin Smith signing and when I walked by the Kevin Smith signing could have been maybe minutes apart, if that.
Yeah.
And we may have been within 10 feet of each other and never realized it.
In the zoo we were in, I totally believe that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I tried to get a couple of photos of just the crowds with my cell phone and stuff. I, again, had gone in the morning with the 360 camera thinking maybe, and I quickly said, nah, not going to happen. And I'm okay with that decision. I would love to have the kind of photo coverage of this year's con like I had for past ones, just to, hey, let me think, what did that Nickelodeon booth look like again? And
mm-hmm.
again, to have that kind of stuff. But I didn't have the time or the energy for it. And I certainly don't think the crowds were conducive.
Yeah.
And if I go back to the photos I took nearly 20 years ago now, I was able, with an actual big camera with like a 6-inch lens, to be across the aisle, stop, wait for people to pass, take a photo explicitly of every booth.
Mm-hmm.
Not just like a time-lapse thing I've done in the last year or two. You cannot do that these days.
No.
It is physically impossible because of the number of people in the venue.
Yeah.
And on the one hand, that's good because they've got a bigger crowd. On the other hand, the crowd is the type that's there for the celebrity sightings, not for the content.
Well, and the exclusives.
The experience and the exclusives.
Yeah.
And the story aspect is getting them there to a degree, but people were there to see Patrick Stewart, not particularly to learn anything about Picard.
Yes.
Because the people we were talking to, like at dinner, because we had dinner with some friends afterwards, one or two of them, they watched the trailer online at the hotel in the evening.
Yeah.
Or on their phone at the hall, whatever. But not in the panel.
Mm-hmm.
Again, subset of people get to do that. So overall, it was a good day. It was a good convention. I'm at the point where I'm certainly open to coming back. I'm not going to say, oh, I'd never come back. Not like I had a bad time. But it's also one of those things where I don't feel anymore that I must come back.
Somebody asked me the other day. They said this was their 13th year. And they were curious, because I'd been coming twice that long, if I feel a compulsion to come every year, if it's an inertia thing. I came last year, therefore I will roll downhill and I will come this year. Or if each year, when it comes around to time to get badges, if I actually think about, do I have a good time last year? Do I want to go? Is this still an experience I want to have every year? I thought it was an interesting question. And I basically asked, where's this coming from? And they said, well, each year as it gets harder and harder to get badges, we've actually started wondering, are we coming because we came last year? Or are we going because we want to go?
One of the things I got out of Con when I first started going was I felt it was where the comic book industry kind of coalesced and manifested for a couple of days during the year, and you could get a sense of where the industry was at.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of the attitude, the psyche, the interest. You could look at the costumes and say, oh, this character's popular in a way they weren't last year.
Yeah.
Or not the way they were the last year. That this is what people are getting sketches of. This is what people are buying stuff of. Of what in the comic world is happening.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what do you overhear people talking about? Oh, excited about this project, excited about that project. And this year, I got none of that.
I can see that.
I walked by the Marvel booth a number of times. I'm not going to say I ever really saw the Marvel booth.
I agree. I never saw it.
I took some photos of the DC booth today with my cell phone, and there was nothing visually there to indicate Year of the Villain or the Legion of Superheroes or anything.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I saw any, with one exception, any familiar face from DC. And I'm not going to count Bob Wayne,
because
he's no longer DC. But I saw Dan Didio in the upper deck talking with somebody at one point. But compare that to the years where we would see Vince or Mike Carlin or half a dozen different people.
Yeah.
At the DC booth, actively being DC.
Yes.
DC Entertainment was there. I did not feel DC Comics was there.
I can see that.
Marvel's been that way for, I'm going to say, a decade. And not in a bad way. I think they show out well for the Marvel cinematic stuff in a much better way than even DC does for the movies or TV. But I didn't even really feel the movie TV presence with the costumes like we'd gotten in past years or stuff like that.
This year, the costumes I was noticing were for Pennyworth.
I'm not even sure I noticed those.
There were some on the front and some on the back.
Okay. This is, again, where having photo coverage of the whole thing would help, because many, many times in past years, oh, that publisher wasn't there, and go through the photos. Yep, there they were. I passed it 3 times. I got the photos to prove it.
Yeah.
It may have registered in the moment, but not as I've gone through the other 1,000-plus booths.
Mm-hmm.
Not getting that sense of the comic industry kind of coalescing and stuff, even though there is an aspect of it still kind of sort of doing that. It's just doing it in the midst of video games, television shows, movies, and other interests, mm-hmm. that it's diluted that aspect for me.
Yeah.
And not having the trade show before or after is part of that. That's been gone for almost 20 years now. And I don't feel Comic-Con is meeting what I want out of it. And I've got unique needs and wants out of that, in terms of supporting the comic popular arts for comics the way it used to when I first started coming. I don't even recall anybody in the last day or so talking about the Eisners.
Mm-mm. I don't recall anybody this year asking me if I was going to the Eisners. Usually someone asks me.
Either going to the Eisners or who won the Eisners or what did you think about this at the Eisners?
Yeah.
Or, for that matter, the Masquerade.
That's a good point. I saw a sign for the Masquerade, but that was it.
That's our experience. Other yes. people, oh, how could you have missed?
But usually people are talking about, wow, did you hear about this at the Masquerade last night?
Yes.
And I wasn't hearing people talk about it. And that's part of why I spend a lot of time on the hall floor talking to people.
Mm-hmm.
I want to know what people are talking about. I want to know what people are excited about.
When I do that, it's more what about the TV shows, the movies, than about the comics.
Yes, agreed.
And that's nature of the beast. It's not indicative of the people I'm talking to, because some of these are hardcore comic people.
I think it's indicative of the convention we're at.
Yeah. And it's evolved over the years. I'm not saying that's good, that's bad. I know Chuck Rosansky, in I think it was his third email newsletter for this year, had a few dozen photos on, comics are nowhere to be found. Photo, photo, photo.
I disagree.
Had I been of a mind to do so, and I hope somebody was, you could have taken photos of the Torpedo Comics booth, the Southern California Comics booth, and definitely two dozen others. Long boxes, comics, trades,
mm-hmm.
Original art.
I thought I was seeing more long boxes than usual this year. If you discount where Mile High used to be, et cetera, if you're just looking at that AB halls.
It was still in ABC, so even if you discount that, I think it was made up for by things like Torpedo and the vendor in the back of the hall near the lounge areas.
Yes. I guess my point is discounting the back walls. Or, you know, the front and the back walls, and only looking at the heart of the halls, I felt I saw more comic book boxes than I've seen in the past few years.
Typically, on the back wall, there aren't many comic boxes. The front wall, Rosansky had 8 or something booths, 10 booths at one point. But even now, if you go back to the low number end of the hall, there's still a number up in the front that have comics.
Okay. Yeah.
So I wouldn't discount those. I think you could cherry pick 2 or 3 dozen photos of booths and paint any picture you wanted.
Yes.
You could make it look like this was nothing but toys. Nothing but comics.
Nothing but two-story booths.
Nothing but two-story booths. Nothing but movies. Nothing but Japanese toys, you know.
Nothing but experiences.
Yes.
Stars, Dark Crystal, Star Trek.
Yeah, yeah. Almost that interactive aspect.
Mm-hmm.
So what you get out of this kind of convention depends what you put into it. I'm not going to say this is one of those years I went uber crazy prepping for it. I just didn't quite have the time. I got a good convention out of it. Could I have had a better convention? Maybe.
There's part of me that always thinks it could have been better. That's part of my nature. But I think I have a wonderful convention. I'm very happy. If this is my last Comic-Con for a few years, I can be happy with this.
This would not be a bad Comic-Con to end on.
Yes.
I don't think that we're going to necessarily.
I never want to end. As someone told me today, I plan to come to Comic-Con until I take my last breath.
I just feel that we've had a few others in the past where I would leave just not imagining I wouldn't come back.
Yes.
But so much of what I did this year was stuff that honestly I could have done online just as easily. There are a few other things I absolutely could not have done online, and were kind of some of the highlights of this. The Discovery signing was one of them. some really good conversations with Tom Zoller, with Ashton at Diamond, with Darren at Sit Comics, stuff like that. There's certain things where the face-to-face stuff definitely is mm-hmm. the way to go.
Yeah.
Which is why I spend my time at the con doing those kinds of things versus what's phase four of Marvel's movies going to look like. Mm-hmm. Don't know. Curious, but not to the point where I want to allocate 6 hours being in line, being in the right place, and cutting out all the other things I could be doing.
Yeah, I agree.
So, overall, good con. I am tired. I'm ready to sleep, but we're going to probably pack up the room a little first so we can start driving out tomorrow. Take us a couple of days to get home. I'll get all this edited. We'll see how many episodes this turns out to be.
At least 3.
I'm thinking 3 at this point. I just need to make sure it kind of breaks cleanly. And hopefully people enjoy the episodes.
Agreed.
Anything else?
I think that does it.
Cool.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.